Today we are going to learn the 18th reading, the third reading of Parsha Shaftim. And the third reading opens with a discussion of the Kohanim. HaKohanim HaLevim. The Torah says, La'yir la'Kohanim HaLevim kol shevet Levi. There should not be for the Kohanim, who are from the tribe of Levi, the entire Shevet Levi this includes, Chelek v'nachala im Yisrael. They should not have a portion of the land of Israel together with the rest of the Jewish people. Ishe Hashem v'nachalasa yechelon. It is the fire offerings of God and His inheritance, and that instead they should eat. I understand this doesn't make so much sense yet. Let's say one more verse, and then we'll take a look in Rashi. Rashi says, v'nachala la yihi eloi. An inheritance he shall not have, bekerev echov, amongst his brothers. Rather, Hashem hu nachalosai, God is his inheritance, kasher diber loy, as he had spoken to him. So let's take a look at this verse from the beginning. Let's see what Rashi says. The first thing we see is it says, la'yia la'koyenim ha'levim, kol shevet levi. This should not be for the koyenim the levim, and then the Torah re-emphasizes kol, the entire tribe of Levi. So usually when it says La'yil la'koyanim ha'levim, if it would say it should not be for the Kohanim, the Levim, and it says it in an unqualified way, it doesn't say for some Kohanim, it doesn't say for some Levim, it says it shouldn't be for Kohanim and Levim. So why does the Torah have to say Kol Shevet Levi, the entire tribe of Levi? So Rashi says Kol Shevet Levi comes to include Bein Tamimim, Bein Bali Mumen. This includes Kohanim who are unblemished or perfect physical specimens, as well as Kohanim, who are blemished. Now, what difference does that make? So the thing is like this. The reason that the Kohanim and Levim do not have a portion of the land of Israel like everybody else is, as Ramban tells us, because God expects them to be fully dedicated to their mission and purpose. And the reality is that people cannot be fully dedicated in two directions. Either you're dedicated to your business, to development of your residuals, it's you're worried about your real estate, or you're able to dedicate yourself to a higher cause. You cannot be involved in two things. It sounds nice to be involved in two things, but realistically speaking, it doesn't work. Perhaps you could link this to what's written in Chavis Alvavis, who says that the heart cannot be full of two burning loves. You cannot have a fiery love for materialism and a fiery love for spirituality. There's no room in the heart, he says, for two fires. The reality is that if a person is involved in administering their business affairs, so then that's first and foremost. They'll do nice things. They'll be an activist. They'll be committed to making some kind of contribution to the proliferation and development of Jewish life. But they're not going to be able to be dedicated spiritual leaders. So which Kohanim would serve in the Beis Hamikdash? Kohanim were unblemished. So here's a Kohen who's blemished. He's not able to serve in the Beis Hamikdash. So you would say, well, if he can't do job A, let him at least have a piece of the land. So the Torah comes along and says, no, it doesn't make a difference. Whether somebody is actively serving in the temple or not actively serving in the temple. La'yiyah la'koyanim ha'levim, the koyanim from the tribe of Levi, and this is an entire tribe, not just koyanim, which are one family of a tribe. The koyanim kol shevet Levi, the entire shevet. They will not have a portion in the land. Now, it says, la'yiyah lahem chelek v'nachla, a portion and an inheritance. What's the difference between a chelek and a nachla? So Rashi says chelek refers to biza. Biza means the spoils of war. A nation goes to war and there are spoils of war. And of course the Jewish people went to war and they conquered the land which was always destined to be theirs, but in the meantime it had been occupied by Canaanites who got the spoils of war. There was a portion divided equally. There was no government to take away 51%. There was no government, in fact. There was no king. We learned that yesterday. Until way, way later, there was no king. So who gobbled everything up? It was divided up amongst the people. There were no taxes. So if there was no government and no taxes, who got everything? And the answer is the population, with one exception. There was one portion of the Jewish people who did not line up to receive the spoils of war when they were divided, and that was the tribe of Levi. The other thing they don't get is nachala. Nachala is the other spoils. Not the spoils, not the residuals captured, but the actual real estate that was captured. They didn't get the nachala, they didn't get the land either. And why not? And what will they receive instead? So the Torah goes on to say, they don't get chelik v'nachala im Yisrael. Rather, ishe Hashem v'nachalosa yechelon. What do they eat? The fire offerings of God and His inheritance. So Rashi says, ishe Hashem, this refers to mikodshei hamigdash, or according to another version, kodshei kadoshim. So that is to say, there are certain parts of the offerings, of sin offerings and guilt offerings, called chatas and asham, which are called ishe Hashem, the fire offerings of God. And they're called fire offerings for God because they're not personal offerings which are brought in order for a person to say, let's say, thank you or show his gratitude to Hashem. These are not the portions of the korban that go home with the people to wherever they are, and they take home the portion of the korban, like a korban Pesach, for example, or a korban Shlomim, which is the Paschal offering, or a peace offering in which everybody gets invited over and everybody gets to eat a pita. Now, this is entirely designated for a sacred purpose. And the Kohanim are going to be eating that meat. It's called Chazav Ashoik in the language of the Gemara. So Chazav Ashoik is something that goes exclusively to the Kohanim. In fact, it's a mitzvah of the Kohanim to eat that meat. V'nachalasei, if Ishi Hashem is the fire offerings, what is Nachalasei? So Rashi says, Nachalasei Elu Kodshei HaGvul. These are the sacred matters that come from the borders of Israel. And this refers, of course, to what's called Teruma and Meiser, which are portions of the harvest of the land of Israel that have to be set aside and given to the Kohanim, and they have a sacred nature. They have they have dealt with in a holy way. The Kohen has to be in a ritual state of ritual purity, and so on and so forth. So that they receive. Aval nachala gemura, but an entire inheritance, not a portion of the inheritance, but an actual piece of the land of Israel, la yielai bekerevechov, they shall not have amongst their brothers. Now, the balance of Rashi goes into a detail of one side of the Jordan and the other side of the Jordan. not for this morning. Let's move on. So that's the basic pshat of Pasuk Aleph and Beis, and the idea of Nachala, Layilahem, this is emphasized twice, and according to the Ohr HaChaim, it's to tell you that even if a Kohen is no longer serving in the Beis HaMikdash, whether it's because of old age or for whatever reason it might be, nonetheless, the law is absolute. If you're from this family, you did not serve in the land of Israel as everybody else did. You didn't have a farm, you didn't have an orchard, you didn't do business. So what did you do? The Torah never gives a specific task to the Kohanim other than serving in the temple. Realistically, there were 24 different families of Kohanim. Each got to serve for 1 week. And even during their week, most people did not serve in the Beis HaMikdash with the exception of one day during the course of that week. So you could serve in the Beis HaMikdash 2 or 3 days in the course of a year. So what did they do? What did these people do?
Study Torah.
The GDP in Israel was not the high tech. it was olives and olive oil and wine, pomegranates, figs, dates. What did they do? They didn't have farms. So Shevet Yisachar was the big Torah studying people. So what did Shevet Levi do? The answer is that they invariably evolved into the role of the clergy. They became the local Rabbanim. They became the local Rashi Yeshiva. They became the Malamdim. They were the people who were involved in the spiritual pursuit of every particular part of Israel they lived in. Remember, the Kohanim had special cities. The Kohanim and Levium had cities which were designated, strewn throughout the land of Israel. I shouldn't say strewn, really strategically placed. 48 cities. And the 48 cities were placed very, very carefully, strategically, in the various provinces. So every municipality had at least one city of Levium in which you had a few hundred, maybe a few thousand Levium living. What did these people do? The answer is, they were automatically designated for the spiritual service of the Jewish people. So here, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu sets it up, there's going to be a tribe who is predisposed to that kind of spiritual leadership. And it was only natural that they were the ones to work in the Beis HaMikdash. It was only expected that because they'll be the ones to work in the Beis HaMikdash, that they feel a sense of closeness to Hashem, that they represent the presence of Hashem. And invariably, this is how, without actually legislating positions of rabbinic leadership, because you can't legislate that. Somebody either is suited or isn't. How do you say, so you have to be a rabbi? I guess can't. I'm scared of heights. I'm scared of speaking publicly. I'm scared. I have so many phobias. I can't do this. So you can't do this. Maybe you could be a mashgiach in the restaurant. I don't know. Find a different job. But the point is, spiritual leadership would be taken from their ranks. Torah doesn't designate which spiritual leadership or what exactly with them. A whole range of things. Could be from a chevra kadisha to teaching aleph beis to children to serving as a dayan in a court. But essentially, all of the needs that the Jewish people would have would be taken care of by the kohanim and the levim. And so the Torah goes on to say in verse 3, V'zeh yiyeh mishpat ha-kohanim. So always know so far as that God is going to provide for them. They'll receive the inheritance of God. What is that going to be? So Torah now says, V'zeh yiyeh mishpat ha-kohanim. This will be the mishpat literally is judgment, but it's more like ration, or this will be the order for kohanim me'esa'am from the nation. Whenever somebody's going to be slaughtering an animal, imshor, imseh, whether it's going to be an ox or it's going to be a sheep, so whenever there's going to be meat eaten, animal slaughtered, portions of that meat will be given to the kohanim automatically. So we already learned that we're going to be repeating it now, how the kohanim received portions of the grain, but in the meantime, they're on an all carbs diet. They didn't get any proteins. But now they got some. They're going to get wool from the animals. They're going to get portions of the harvest. Never going to have any meat unless they're in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Torah now says, no, they will have meat. Because when an animal is slaughtered, not a wild animal, not a deer, not a gazelle, which are kosher, but an animal which is what we call a domesticated animal, a behemoth, but when it will be slaughtered, it will be given to the Kohanim. Rashi says, me'esa'am from the nation, v'loy me'esa'kareinim. A Kohen who brings the animal to be slaughtered does not have to give it to his fellow Kohanim, which is unlike Truma, which has to be designated, separated, and sacred, and holy. This is just a financial thing. Whether it's an ox or it's a sheep. So the Rashi says, Prat l'chaya. This excludes a wild, undomesticated animal. Which parts of the animal have to be given? So the Torah says, Hazroya. Hazroya, Rashi says, is min ha-perek shel arkuba ad hamokim. Pardon me, ad kaf shel yad shekredim aspeldun. I don't know, that's old French. Bottom line is that the leg of an animal is divided in three. There's what you would call the arm, the equivalent of the arm. This is the equivalent of, which I guess would be from here to here till the elbow. Then the animal has the equivalent of what you would call, what would you call this? Not the arm, we would call this the?
Forearm,
the arm, and the hand. Well, animals don't have hands, but they do have actually three joints. So there's a joint from the animal's shoulder, and that's the forearm. Then there's the next part of the animal's leg, which is from here to here. And then there's the actual hoof of the animal, or the foot of the animal. This one's got 4 feet, no fingers, but there's a third portion. So we're talking here about the forearm, which is actually has a lot of meat on it. That's chunky, a chunky piece of meat that's right off the shoulder of the animal. So the lower part of the animal, that wouldn't be much. You get a lot of bone. You get hooves to eat. It doesn't help anybody. But the forearm actually is a very meaty piece. So that was given to the Kohanim. L'chayayim. L'chayayim are the jaw. So the jaw is rather bony. However, Rashi says the jaw comes together im haloshen, together with the tongue, which is considered a choice piece of meat. And now Rashi adds something very interesting. He says, Dershei Reshumais are rabbis who delved into the various things that Torah teachings allude to. Hayoeimrim, they used to say that this business of the Kohanim receiving portions of the meat, which is only talked about in Chumash Devarim, it's never discussed prior. We didn't hear about this in Parshas Korach, only later at the end. So this is connected to the bravery of Pinchas, that the Zeroya, that the forearm is Tachas Yad, that represents the forearm of Pinchas. Shenemar Vayikach Reimach Beyodai, Pinchas raised a spear with his hand. And we know that the primary source of strength in the arm is the biceps, not the lower part of the arm. L'chayayim, the jaw, is tachas tefillah, that corresponds to prayer, because Pinchas was davening, as it says, Shenemar, as it says in the book of Tehillim, in the book of Psalms, Psalm 106, it says, V'yamei Pinchas v'yipala, Pinchas rose up and he prayed. V'akeva, and the lower stomach of the animal, that corresponds to ha'isha al-kubasa, the way Pinchas actually killed Zimri and his in a morada, I don't know, person he cohabited with. So this is how Rashi explains it. And Rashi is basically quoting the Sifri. The Rambam, in Moreh Nevuchim, says something very interesting. He says we know that the Kohanim always receive the first cut, the first of the harvest, the finest, the choice of the wine, of the oil. So he says, L'chayayim, the cheek, or the jawbone of the animal, that's Reishis HaGuf. When an animal goes poking around, what's the first part of the animal that empties into a new scrimmage? The head of the animal. But the nose doesn't do very much for you. The first part of the animal that's actually meaty is the cheek, is the jawbone. So the Kohanim has to have Reishis. Then he says, the forearm of the animal, that's the beginning of the limbs of the animal. The animal has four limbs, but the limbs start to come from the shoulder. So he said it's the beginning of the limbs of the animal. And finally he says, the me'ayim, the stomach, that's the beginning, the onset of the animal's stomach and the animal's on the meat, I guess we would call flanken. So he says, because there's a reishis, there's a first in each of those, the kohanim get the first. Gersana the Rabag says that there's allusion also here to the importance of the tribe of Levi. As we discussed, the biceps is the strength, just like the strength of a person, it's the strength of the animal. It's the strongest muscle that you do things with. So the Ralbag says that Shevet Levi is considered to be the Zeroya, the forearm of the nation of Israel. They are the Koyach, they are the power of Israel. You see, the tribe of Levi doesn't go to war. And the tribe of Levi doesn't make a lot of money. These are the things that people do valor with on the battlefield, in the marketplace. And the tribe of Levi is removed for that. And people might foolishly think that the tribe of Levi, they're a bunch of takers, not givers. They're not the strength of the nation, they're the weak link of the nation. The strong people, the warriors and the merchants, the farmers and those who are involved in raising the cattle, they have to take care of the weakling Levites. That's Zvulun and Yisachar. Yisachar was not necessarily the ones doing valor, so to speak, in the market or high seas. But Ralbag says the message of giving these cuts of the meat is to the one who gives it and to the one who gets it. It's a very, very clear message being broadcast. The Zroya, the strength of the Jewish people, is not to be found with arms. It's not to be found with bank accounts. The strength of the Jewish people is its spiritual devotion. If our spiritual devotion is in place, everything else could fall into place and be right. If our spiritual devotion isn't right, so then our armies and our economy are actually worthless. And this is a mistake that many people make today, thinking that the strength of Israel is its army. The strength of Israel is its economy. The strength of Israel is its high tech. No, my friends. The strength of Israel is our closeness to Hashem. The strength of Israel is our study of Torah and performance of mitzvahs. That does not mean that everybody doesn't have to participate in the building of a society. And it doesn't mean that everybody, that you have those who exempt themselves necessarily or unfairly. This is a discussion on the side. But the strength of the nation of Israel comes from its Torah and from its mitzvahs. And he says, this is the message of the forearm. L'chayayim, this is the concept of prayer, which is done usually with one's mouth, and it's also the concept of Torah study. And he says, finally, the idea of the keva, the stomach, is of course where nourishment comes from. That's how people, you ingest the food and you have to digest it then. And he said, the message for us is that prosperity and the ability for us to be sustained comes from l'chayayim in keva. It comes from the strength, the spiritual strength of the Kohanim. It comes from the prayers and the Torah study of the priestly class. That's where the stomach is able to be fed from. So this is how Ralbag says there's this broader message. And finally, the Kli Yakar says that the Zroya represents the arms of the Kohanim that are raised up in blessing. So we know that the Kohanim don't just give a blessing. The Kohanim raise their arms in blessings like this. In fact, it says that when the Kohanim raise their arms, that in and of itself already the blessing comes. The raising of arms, Nesias Kapayim, is already a giving of blessing. And interestingly, the priestly blessings are called Nesias Kapayim. It's called raising of arms. So Kli Yakar says that the Zroya, the forearm, represents the raising of arms. He says the Luchayayim, the jaw, the cheek, that represents the actual Birchas Kohanim. And he says the stomach represents that in the merit of the blessings that the Kohanim provide, the people are nourished and sustained. So we have various allusions that are being, drawn out and sent to us here. Ramban says you should know the reason that this is never mentioned before is because up until this point, nobody ever ate meat on their own. You could only eat meat if you were bringing a korban. There was no shchita. Shchita, as we learned last week, only began in Eretz Yisrael for personal needs. There was shechita in the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan. And then people could eat the meat of the shechita. There was basar nechira. People would kill animals as they pleased. There was no laws of shechita. The laws of shechita for ordinary meat began only once we came into the land of Israel. So here, Moshe Rabbeinu, speaking to the Jewish people, on the eve of their entrance, that's where he mentions the idea of Zroi L'chayayim Mikeva, and that's why previously in Parshas Korach it wasn't mentioned at all. Now, however, in verse 4, we go back to the gifts of the Kohanim, which have already been discussed in Parshas Korach. Reishas Tigoncha, the beginning of your grain, and the beginning of Tiroishcha, of your wine vats, V'yitzarecha, and of your oil presses, V'reishas Geiz, and the first shearings of the wool, of Tzayincha, Titen La, you'll give to him. So here the Torah has emphasized the different gifts that are going to be received. We hear about the meat, the cuts of meat, this is fresh, this is new, this was never discussed before. And now we hear about the various other forms of truma, the bread, if you will, the wine, the oil, and finally the wool to be able to have clothing. So the Kohanim are provided for. And here's something very interesting happens. The ideas talked about in verse 4 have been discussed in much greater detail previously in the book of Leviticus. And yet, only here does Rashi say the following. Reishis Tegoncha, take a look in Rashi. He says, Zutruma. This refers to Truma. And then he says something interesting, which Rashi never said before. V'leipirish bashir. It doesn't say how much. It doesn't say how much. And you know, biblically, you could take one ear of wheat, one grain, and you can give that, and you can exempt an entire field. One bulb, one kernel. But our rabbis did give an amount. And what's the amount? Ayin Yafa, a generous person, gives Echad Me'arboim, 1/40, which is more than 2%. Ayin Ra, a person who is, you know, not very generous, he gives Echad Me'shishim, which is less than 2%. And finally, the Beinonis gives Echad B'chamishim, the person who is, you know, somewhere in the middle, an in-betweener, he gives 2%. 1/50th, 2% of whatever comes in. So if the Kohen, if the farmer reels in 100 bushels of whatever it is, 2 bushels of apples, it's not bad. If he got one apple, that wouldn't be very impressive. How are you going to feed a family with an apple? But he reeled in 2 bushels of apples, and he came home with 2 bushels, with 100 bushels, pardon. He came home with 2 bushels, or even more, if he gave 1/60th, he gave almost 3. That's significant. Then Rashi comes along, I'm going to skip Rashi and Alteratius had gaze. Rashi says the same thing. Kishata Geizet Tzeincha B'Shana, when there's the annual shearing of the sheep, the CNE always has a sheep. You can go there and see how they shear a sheep, if you want to understand this. So he says, Tain Mimena Reishas L'Kohen, the first shearings you give to the Kohen. And again Rashi says, very curiously, V'le Pirish Shear, doesn't say how much. And the truth is biblically be a tiny amount, a smidgen of wool. So he says, Rabbi Seinun, Asna Bashir, the rabbis gave a portion. And what's that? Once again, Echad Mishishim. Here we have 1/60th, more than 2%. So the obvious question is, why did Rashi decide to talk to us about the amounts of how much Truma and how much Meiser, how much, well, not Meiser, but Truma, how much of the harvest and how much of the wool has to be given? Why did he talk about it here? And what does that have to do with Pshuta Shomekin? Like, Rashi doesn't go into details. This is not a book of halacha. It's not all, you want to know how to give truma? Look in Rashi. No, don't look in Rashi. You want to know how to give truma? Look in the Shulchan Aruch. Like the Sugazunt. Look in the Mishnah. That Rashi is explaining the Chumash to you. So if there's not a problem in understanding the Chumash, Rashi won't say anything. And therefore, Rashi does talk about the foreleg and the cheek. He talks about that. Why? Because that's some weird stuff. Why are we giving pieces of an animal? So Rashi feels a need to tell you Darshan Hashumas. Here's an allusion. Truth is, there are other reasons. I shared a bunch of them with you. But Rashi feels compelled to give you at least one reason because it's just like out of the blue. What, you're cutting up an animal? Why? What? But why does Rashi start telling us about amounts? I wouldn't know if there's an amount. We would think there's no amount. But you should know, really, there is an amount. But what does that have to do with anything? Reish Chav Dalet in the Biurim Buksim and Dalet of Parsha Shaftim, the Rebbe asks exactly this question. Question number one. The Torah doesn't give a specific amount. So Rashi does have to give an amount. Torah doesn't say any amount. It says you give. You'll give the first of your grain. You give the first of your wine vat. The first of your olives. You give that to the Kohen. How much? I don't know how much. I'm learning Chumash now. I don't have to know how much when I learn Chumash. All I have to know is that I give choice cuts of meat to the Kohen. All I have to know is that when I'm harvesting my field, I give firstling grain, I give firstling wine, firstling for the first choice is olive oil, I have to give to the Kohen. That's all I have to know. So Rashi goes in and says, well, Leipirish Bashir. I know it's Leipirish Bashir. The Torah didn't give me an amount. I know. Why does Rashi to emphasize that? But Rabbi Seinu Nasna Bashir. L'mayinaf kamino. Who cares? What relevance does it have to understanding this verse? That's question one. Question two. If Rashi did see for some reason a need to communicate the specific percentages of how much have to be contributed and given, why didn't he do so a whole two chumashim ago? We talked about this in Parshas Korach. After Korach challenged the kahuna, the priesthood of Aaron, and after Aaron's kahuna was ratified, what immediately comes after that? Matnas kahuna. Chavdalut matnas kahuna. We hear about 24 different forms of gifts to the Kohanim. Why do we hear about it there? Because you know what happens? When somebody's position is weakened, and they bounce back, and they survive the attack, they're never the same. Instead, they're much stronger. The kahuna was questioned. The kahuna was undermined and attacked. God himself ratified the kahuna. And what happened afterwards? The priesthood was much stronger. And God made it much stronger. Here's where he told us about the various gifts that have to be given. And Rashi there says nothing. It says about firstling grain, and it says about firstling the wine vats, and it talks about the olive presses. Rashi says nothing. All of a sudden, in Parsha Shaftim, where entire collections of verses are now restated in a single verse, and Rashi is giving us percentages. Like, what happened in Parsha Shaftim? Why was he sleeping at the switches back in the book of Leviticus or back in the book of Numbers? Question three, why doesn't Rashi give other percentages? There are other mitzvahs. You know, there's a mitzvah called Peah, the edge of the field, which is mistranslated often on his corner. How much is the edge of the field? How much is a farmer when he leaves to the poor? How much of an edge does he have to leave? But like two stalks of grain? By the way, biblically you can get away with that, but the rabbis gave an amount. Rashi never says it. There's a mitzvah called Bikurim, firstling fruit. You go out to your field, you see your trees blossoming. The first blossoms, you take a little piece of a ribbon or yarn, you tie around it to remark what were the first blossoms. And then months later, when the fruit reaches maturation, you pick that fruit, you set it aside. And if it's going to rot by the time you get to Yerushalayim, you cure it. So you may not bring actual grapes, you may bring raisins, but you're going to bring, for how much? One raisin? A grape? Two grapes? So biblically, there's no amount given. Rabbinically, there's an amount. Rashi never tells what it is. You want to know what it is? There are places to learn about that. Not the Chumash. That's with the Oral Torah. That's Mishnah and the Mechilta, Sefra Sefri. And Rashi doesn't have a need usually to quote these things. When it comes, however, to the firstling grain, Rashi is giving you a song and dance. The Torah didn't give a percentage, but the rabbis did give a percentage. It has nothing to do with Rashi's commentary. So the Rebbe, in a very, very fresh approach, says it has everything to do with understanding these verses. Because this is the first time that the Torah clearly spelled out that the Kohanim and Leviim do not have a portion of the land of Israel. So what's the obvious question a person is going to ask? They don't have a portion of the land of Israel. What's the obvious question? How are you going to live? How are you going to live? You know that silly story of this the young man who meets his prospective father-in-law, and his wife says later, how'd the meeting go? He says, great, great. He's a really nice young man. One little problem. So what's that? He said, he thinks I'm God. She says, that's great. What's wrong with that? He said, no, it's not so good. I said, how are you going to make a living? He said, God will provide. I said, where are you going to live? He said, God will provide. How's the Kohen? God will provide. What God will provide? God says, he put a system in place. What's a system? The system is, the Kohenim is going to get, they're going to get it. Oh, that's great. You can feed a whole family of Kohenim with what? He said, come home with a stalk of grain. He said, hi, kids, I got lunch today. And the kids are going to look at us and say, Dad, that's like a stalk of grain. Well, we're Kohenim, that's what we get. How are we going to live? You have to make Kiddush on Friday night. Well, we got a thimble of wine. Yeah, but the thimble of wine, how we need wine. How am I making scrambled eggs? There's no oil here. Well, we have to figure it out. That's all we get. We get a little L'chaim glass of wine and we can make it last for a month now. So exactly this is the question that comes up. The question is, the Kohen will be, I'm not going to have a portion of the land of Israel. Why they're not going to have a portion? And how are they going to live? They're going to get the portion of God. In other words, the gifts to the Kohen are supposed to make up what they don't get in the form of spoils of war and of land. So the Kohen says, what's going on over here? The child says, how will it be? Gifts that doesn't say an amount, doesn't say a percentage. How's that going to provide? Chita achas peiteres esakri. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, one bulb, one grain, that it can exempt an entire field of harvest. Which is incidentally what we do today, because we don't give the truma the kohen. We just take a piece of wheat and we burn it. That's it. The rest of the field is able to be used. So he said, if chita achas peiteres, how are they going to live? How's that going to become a source of parnasa, of sustenance? Lachein mefarash Rashi. So Rashi comes along and says, it's true, the Torah didn't give an amount. The Torah expected the Jewish people to be magnanimous and super generous. However, knowing that there's not always magnanimity and there's not always generosity, the rabbis dealt with practical stuff that the Torah sometimes didn't deal with. The Torah has the highest opinion of us. God looks at us as we are in the highest of levels. Surely they'll be generous. Surely they'll be good. Surely they'll provide. Yeah, that's in cloud nine. Here we are in the ground, and everybody is dog eat dog and selfish, and they just want to get ahead and an extra $5 in the pocket. Okay, so in that case, I'll be saying in Asta Bashir, Echad Mishishim, and so on and so forth. And now it all makes perfect sense. And that's what we get for today's offerings.